Hey everyone, welcome to 10 Movies, the podcast where we dig into the work of one actor through 10 of their films. I'm Hemal Javeri, and with me is co-host and supreme interrupter Brian Minter. Say hello.
No, I'm not going to, because I'm being passively angry about you calling me an interrupter.
On this season...
Go ahead, Hemal. Do your introduction.
On this season of 10 Movies, we're digging into the movies of the incredible Jennifer Lopez. Last week, Brian and I talked about the critically acclaimed Out of Sight, though neither of us really liked the movie that much.
Don't bother.
No, it's a skip.
Watch Ocean's 11.
This week, we are talking about Jennifer Lopez's rom-com years with the 2002 classic Made in Manhattan, starring Jennifer Lopez, Ralph Fiennes, Natasha Richardson, and in a very underrated role, Stanley Tucci.
Ralph Fiennes.
Ralph
Fiennes. It's Ralph.
It's Ralph.
It's very counterintuitive.
Please just keep saying Ralph Fiennes throughout this entire
show. Up until I was 15 minutes into this movie, I thought it was Monster in Law for some reason. In my head, it was Monster in Law, which is, I haven't seen that one, so I don't know why I thought it was going to be that.
Monster in Law is Jennifer Lopez with Jane Fonda, right?
Yes, a different Jennifer Lopez comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought this was that. Because all these movies have such bland titles. You don't know what to...
They do. They kind of have bland titles. They're all alliterative. And she did a lot of I don't even know if she did a lot of romantic comedies, but like the actors that we've talked about, Keanu Reeves and Matthew McConaughey in previous seasons, there was a period in the late 90s, early 2000s, where everyone was making rom-coms and trying to get their stars into rom-coms. And this is just her kind of rite of passage.
Someone put Ralph Fiennes in a rom-com thinking that was a good idea, and they were mistaken.
It is. I have to say that the casting in this film is... it makes you
uninspired.
Think, it makes you think twice.
Poorly chosen. So for those of our listeners who have not seen the film recently or who have confused it with Monster in Law, what happens in the movie Made in Manhattan?
I'll say the plot is a lot easier than it was with Out of Sight, though it might make less sense. It's kind of an updated Cinderella tale.
Yeah, it's a fairy tale.
She is a maid who...
In Manhattan.
Oh, and I should point that it's spelled M-A-I-D, Made in Manhattan,
yes,
not
right.
M-A-D-E.
Because she's, so, get it?
Get it? Because she's a maid. She's a maid, and she works at a very fancy hotel, and through a quirk of mistaken identity, Ralph Fiennes, who is running for state senate, thinks that she is some fancy New York lady and kind of falls in love with her, and she lets him believe that, you know, she might be a little bit more well off than she actually is, kind of hides who she really is.
She lets him believe that she is of her class.
Right.
She's of his class.
She is of his class. She's not just the maid.
Yes.
And they kind of, you know, have this miscommunication, and eventually the truth does come out. And there is a dramatic scene where you really hope that they'll get together again, and then they don't. But then in the end, everything works out.
Is there just one of those scenes? Because I feel like there's a whole sequence of them.
It could be a few.
You know, so I don't actually think this is a rom-com, right? Like, often when we watch I think it's marketed as such.
Oh.
But, you know, you said it was a fairy tale, and like... Often when we watch the romantic comedies, I'm real curmudgeonly about them because with most romantic comedies, we are made to understand that this is a realistic story happening in the world we know. And so then when people behave in ways that are completely alien to the world in which we live, it is annoying to me.
Mm-hmm.
This, though, when that happens, I don't bump on it at all because it feels very fairy tale. Like, it feels fable like. It doesn't map directly to the Cinderella story, but it's the Cinderella story, and kind of all the major, like, beats from Cinderella are here, you know, translated to modern day New York City.
Yeah. Did you like the film or not?
I was a little bit meh on the film.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know. It was, like I said, it wasn't like. It was a lot. It had a lot to recommend it, and I feel like there was a great movie in it, but like it's basically a romance. As a love story, the love story falls so flat that ultimately I did not really enjoy the movie.
Okay.
Now, you've seen this movie before and you're a fan.
I've seen this movie countless times.
You like all kinds of terrible movies.
I think the only thing that I have going for me is my taste in terrible films. Let me just tell you guys this. No, I actually do really like this movie, but again, probably because 2002, it came around a time when I was really impressionable, so it's imprinted on me in ways that, of course, if I saw it now, it would not register
at all.
It was
one of those movies you watched all the time on cable.
Yeah, and it's rerun into the ground on E or whatever now, but I actually do really like the movie because I can see all the ways in which it works. There's plenty of ways in which it does not work, but I think that movie does have a lot of interesting things to say about class and race. And even though people try to make it a Cinderella story, there's a little bit of the end that I think pulls it back into reality. So
I enjoy
it.
Get into this more when we talk about the wokeness of the film, or lack thereof. I do think the movie has a very, very strong perspective on class.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that makes me wish it were a more interesting film. But I think I actually don't think it is about race. I think it's specifically not about race in a couple different ways.
Yeah.
But the romance at the heart of it is so flat and uninteresting that all of the context and all the setup for it it's a miss.
I think that it works for me because I really like Jennifer Lopez in this film. I really like her character. She plays Maria Ventura. Maria Ventura, the maid. And this entire movie works for me because Jennifer Lopez works for me in this film. She's great in this movie.
This may be the most Jennifer Lopez role of her. Certainly of everything we've watched and maybe of everything she's done. This is the urtext of Jennifer Lopez.
Let's talk about the cast.
Well, there's one real problem in the cast, and it's not Jennifer Lopez. it's your friend Rafe.
Okay, I don't understand. All right, let's talk about Ralph Fiennes for a second, but let's talk about the context of Ralph Fiennes in 2002.
Well, so the character is, he's not even really his fault. The character is just, it's written
it's
so badly.
Fault. No, it's his fault.
I don't think it is. Well, so the character is, I'm being shushed because we're podcasting in Hemel's patio and our neighbors are outside being mad at us. Also, if you hear the ceaseless roar of the cicadas, that's part of this season's podcasting feature.
So you're talking about Ralph Fiennes is the problem or not the problem?
Well, so the character, for those of you who may not recall or have seen the film, he's like a New York assemblyman, but he's running for Senate. I think U.S. Senate rather than State Senate.
Yeah.
But the media are following him, and you are made to understand that, because he's the scion of this political dynasty. His dad was a senator. His grandfather was a senator. He's not a Kennedy. He's a Kennedy-esque figure, right? So,
right.
You're made to believe that he's rich and he's handsome and the media is crazy about him and he's this 1% of the 1% ruling class guy. But the character isn't even one-dimensional. He's just complete. It's like he has a concussion. They have forgotten to give him any motivation or reason for doing any of the things he does.
I think your bar for rom-coms is very high, but also...
You don't like him either.
It's not that I don't like him. It's just that he's Ralph Fiennes, right? This is 2002 Ralph Fiennes. He's just coming off of The English Patient. He's the guy, right? He's super hot in Hollywood. Women are swooning after him.
He's
because
a handsome fella.
He's handsome and he's British and he was in The English Patient. So he's carrying all of that baggage.
His
into
American
this role.
Accent is not... doing it. He's not. He needed a little more accent.
No, and to me, that they try to take away what made him such a draw, which is this kind of aristocratic Englishness, and wipe it out by making him this bland New Yorker. If they had just left him as eccentric English guy, it would have been incredible.
But so I think... So I think that maybe a Clooney-level, charming, handsome actor could have saved this role, but... the character, I don't think it's the acting. I think the character is so undefined. So he's this this recurring thing in the movie. He's come to New York to run for Senate, and Stanley Tucci's his campaign manager. Every single scene, to the point where it gets completely tedious, Stanley Tucci's you've got to go to the luncheon. You've got to go talk to the political boss.
Hey, there will be no Stanley Tucci slander on this podcast,
and
okay?
And every scene, he's like, I'm not going to do that. I'm after the hot maid. So what I want this character to be, either I want him to be one way to do it is he has been training his whole life for this. He's going to the show. He's ready for this. He's a political animal, but he's throwing it all away because he's in love with the hot maid. Or you could go the complete opposite direction and he's ambivalent about this and it's just his family's legacy. It's not what he wants for himself. And then he sees a different vision of life when he meets the hot maid. Whatever it is, give me a reason why this guy is just wandering around throwing everything away in his life. The movie doesn't give any, like, there's nothing for Ralph to act about here because his character has no motivation at any moment. He's just distracted by the hot maid.
And part of this is interesting because it flips. He's given the role that a lot of women are usually given. Right?
Yes, you're right. He's mindless eye candy.
Yeah, he's literally just here to be, to like prop up, be the love interest for Jennifer Lopez. Because Jennifer Lopez gets all of the good stuff in this film.
Yeah, he has no interiority.
He has nothing, right? And he's the role that so many women have to play. Like, I want to see.
There's a whole layer of wokeness to this film.
Yeah, see, I want to see this directed at some women roles, right? Like some female roles in Sahara. Like, this is the Penelope Cruz rule.
You come back to that, so. That made you so angry, the way Penelope Cruz was mistreated in Sahara.
It made me so angry because she's such
Rightly
a great
so.
Actress.
Rightly so.
She's such a great actress. And it's the same thing with Ralph Fiennes. Like, they just gave him the lady role. They were like, he just needs to be the dude that is rich.
Yeah,
and
they didn't think for a second, like, why is he behaving in these ways? It doesn't matter.
And he gets only a few of the scenes in the film are kind of from his perspective. Most, I would say 80% of the film
Those
is from...
are the worst scenes, though.
Yes.
Because every scene with just him is him telling Stanley Tucci he doesn't want to do the one thing he's on Earth to do. And there's no reason why he's not doing
he's
it.
He's just kind of being this, like, weird, spoiled guy within the film.
To the luncheon. I met a maid 9 days ago, so I won't go to the luncheon. Just go to the goddamn luncheon. That's your only job. And you don't have a good reason for not going to the luncheon.
All right, let's cut you off right there. And
really? You don't want me to rant a little more about how poorly written this character is? But I do really like, I think you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Like, this is the, like, we're used to seeing this complete lack of interiority or agency
female
from,
characters
like, the female lead.
All the time.
Like, where the male character is chasing after her.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's, but it almost reflects poorly on Jennifer Lopez, too, because you're like, why do you like that guy? He's given you no reason other than being rich and handsome.
Exactly. Rich and handsome is it. And okay, you know what? That's fine. Rich and handsome is more than enough. All right, we're going to save Jennifer Lopez towards the end. Let's talk about...
You enjoyed Stanley Tucci.
I really like Stanley Tucci in this.
He's always got a good comic energy.
I love Stanley Tucci in this. I think that he has 90% of the funny lines in the film, and they gave him kind of a thankless role to be the campaign manager.
His character is so one-note. Like, every scene, he's just, his job is to make the guy do the thing he doesn't want to do.
He's kind of the foil, right? The one who's kind of pushing Ralph Fiennes into the life that he's supposed to have. I think
if
he does
I
really
were Stanley
well.
Tucci, the 15th time Ralph put me off, I'd be like, look, asshole, you hired me to run your campaign. If you don't want to do it, that's fine. I'm out of here.
Ralph. Natasha Richardson. Natasha Richardson, she plays the woman that Jennifer Lopez is pretending to be.
Oh, the
She plays
the
Caroline
Hateful
Lane.
Rich
lady. She plays Caroline Lane.
Yes.
And... she is, you know, built up as kind of the rich, snotty white lady
villain.
Who is the villain.
Well, class is the villain here, right? And she's the like,
she's the epitome
she,
of
yeah,
that
she's
class.
The epitome of the ruling class.
She is the epitome of that class. The one who kind of thinks that she's nice to the maids, but is really condescending to the maids.
Yeah, all of the members of the ruling class in this film. And again, we can come back to this, but the film is really pointed about this. Every member of the ruling class, except for Ralph, are assholes. And we are encouraged to see them as, like, really unredeeming.
So one important thing that we've left off in the plot summary and all of this is that the key instigator in this romance is Jennifer Lopez's son. She has a son. She's a single mom in this film. She's a single mom in the film. Her son is Ty Ventura, played by Tyler Posey, who, if you're familiar with Teen Wolf, kind of grew up to be a hunk. But the kid...
Wait, the original Teen Wolf with Michael J. Fox?
No, the MTV reboot.
Oh, well, I didn't watch that.
You're an old person. But Tyler Posey plays Ty, her son. And again, it's a gamble to have kids in your films. And I think he does great. He's a great kid actor.
Yeah, I think as we've discussed before, a kid actor, the best a kid actor can do is not suck in the movie. And I think he clears that bar.
And... they have, to me, it's a pretty believable relationship, like a pretty believable mother-son relationship. And the meet-cute in this is that Ty kind of meets Ralph Fiennes' character in an elevator, and he sets this whole thing in motion by being like, hey, can I go for a walk? This nice man has a dog.
Yes, because the Ralph Fiennes character is suffering from a concussion, he meets a child in an elevator and blows his whole schedule to go hang out with a kid he just met in an elevator.
That's how much he hates campaigning.
But again, yeah, but that's the problem, right? Like, I'm not objecting to it on realistic grounds. I'm objecting to it because, did he do that because he hates campaigning? Like, give me a reason why he did it, and the movie doesn't. They're like, oh, well, someone hit him in the head with a rock, and therefore he's just going to wander off with his 11-year-old he just met.
He is a little hapless, but that's part of the charm. Like, I think he's written that way. Deliberately might be too strong a word, but the choices are deliberate.
I think when they got to the set for day one of shooting, they realized they had forgotten to script to that character in any way, shape, or form. And so Rafe was just told to, like, smile and nod and go to the next scene.
There's also, I don't know if you picked up on this, Amy Sedaris plays the best friend.
Yeah, she's the best friend of the hateful. She's the overtly hateful member of the white ruling class.
Yeah, she plays. She has some good comedic bits in it. So, but underused as I think pretty much everybody in this cast is.
Yeah, there's not a, like everybody. Yeah, there's a bunch of people who are fine, but like, yeah, it's really just Jennifer Lopez and doing her thing.
And she does great in it. All right, so are we ready to talk about Jennifer Lopez?
Yes, Jennifer Lopez at the heart of Made in Manhattan.
Jennifer Lopez. So, what Jennifer Lopez brings to the role? Toughness.
She's so tough in this movie. She's got grit.
She's got grit out the wazoo. Sex appeal.
She's hot. She's the hot maid. That's
what
the whole movie's about.
Super hot maid. Sass.
She's sassy. She's got ambition. She's going to make it.
She's going to do things. Competency. Very competent.
Yeah, she's the best maid. She's going to go to manager school because she's such a good maid. And the other maids love her for it. They don't even resent her.
See, it's so great.
And when she gets fired from being a maid, she's a maid at someplace else, like later that day.
Even with the scandal following her.
Even with the scandal of being fired from the maiding at one place.
Working class.
She's so working class. She's a single mom. She's in the Bronx. She's got a, her own mom is even a single mom. There's just layers of working classness about this character. Almost cartoonishly so.
I mean, cartoonishly so, but everything in this film is...
fairy tale-y.
It's fairy tale-y, but it's also true to life. Like, I think a lot of this movie has, like, weird parallels with, like, actual Jennifer Lopez's life. Like, Selena did, too, right? Kind of grew up in the same part of New York City, the same working class background. To me, this is a movie where Jennifer Lopez doesn't really have to act very much. Like,
yeah,
she's not pulling from somebody else's background.
I don't think it's true to life. I think it's stylized and, like, kind of, like, hypercolor. I do agree with you. I think this is like all of the things that you hire Jennifer Lopez to do.
Yes.
She's doing them in this movie. We want like a tough, sassy. She's Jenny from the block 24/7 in this movie. Every scene, she's Jenny from the block.
I think this is the kind of archetype that she's really good at. We talked about this with Out of Sight 2, which is there is this innate toughness in her, this grit that she was great when she was playing Karen Sisko, and you needed for a federal agent. But the toughness and the grit is also kind of required to be a single mom to make it in New York, right?
Yeah, and then, even when they do all the kind of Cinderella glamoury stuff, I think she's very convincing at making you feel like that's the one time she's uncertain. It's like, oh, I don't wear fancy dresses, or oh, I don't go to the gala.
Yeah.
Like, it's very believable that she doesn't suffer from, she does suffer from a little bit of class anxiety, which you also believe, but like she very clearly shows that like when she's out of her world, out of her element.
Yeah, I think it works for her. Does this film have a J-Lo moment for you?
The most J-Lo moment of the film. What did you feel was the most J-Lo moment?
I have so many. I've seen this movie so many times. To me, there's a whole bunch. I don't know if I can pick just one. Might have to think about this for a second.
I mean, so, like, again, if you think, so this movie, and we can get to this in a moment, this movie is so, like, the context is so much about the class divide and class barrier, and this is so much a movie about Jennifer Lopez as an avatar of that. The working class, you know, Latina single mom. There's so many scenes where they remind you, like, hey, this is what she's all about. But there's a scene, there's one scene where she yells at Ralph, and she's like, you are never going to love a maid. Go back to your rich white world, you asshole. But there's another, so she's got a mom who is a piece of work. Like, she,
yes.
Her mom is mean and does not, like, believe in her. So her mom is, you know, kind of, she loses her job towards the end because she tried on the rich lady's clothes and she pretended she was the rich lady. So the mom's, you know, giving her this, like, you can't date that rich guy. You need to go call Ms. Rodriguez and clean houses for Ms. Rodriguez. And she, like, she's about to go in the bathroom because she's kind of running away from mom. And she gives her this, like, listen, Mom, you never supported me, and that's fine, but I'm the best maid in Manhattan, and tomorrow I'm not going to call Ms. Rodriguez. I'm going to go work at a different hotel, and mm-hmm. I'm going to do really good there, and I'm going to do their management program, and I got knocked down, but I'm going to get back up again. And then she slams the bathroom door on her mom, and that was almost like the thesis statement for the movie. The movie that was more about her as a person.
I have been holding back, but I was going to say the exact same thing. Like,
oh,
that
moment?
Yes. Like, yeah. That is my favorite scene in the entire film, and like, I want to watch that movie.
Yeah, the
like,
movie
I
that this
watch,
could be
that's
is that.
The movie that mm-hmm. I want to watch. Like, I don't need the rest of the stuff, but like, the entire dynamic of that 30-second scene. Like, you see what Jennifer Lopez is capable of in that little moment, too. Like, this, like, raw emotion that especially is true for a lot of immigrants. Like, but that's like one of the most J-Lo moments of it for me is like, again, she can like she flips, right? She's kind of quiet and she's just been through this like devastating life event and her mom is ripping into her. But she's like, okay, I'm taking this. And then she just like flips on a dime and you get that like strength.
Yeah, and not over the top.
No.
It's like very, very realistic, very authentic,
like,
you know,
authentic
she's pissed.
Stuff. And she's pissed and it could be like super melodramatic, but she does such a great job.
Yeah. And she,
scene.
You know, she loves her mom and she was like, it's not even like. She's had enough of this lady at this moment, you know, coming after her. Yeah, I agree. I think there's the movie has this really strong kind of like political point of view.
Yeah.
And you get these couple scraps, like that scene where like, or there's another scene where like Ralph is like, she's like, where are you going?
Right.
In your limo. He's like, well, I'm going up to the Bronx because we're going to talk about public housing. And she's like, motherfucker, I lived in that public housing project. Don't go up there and tell those people what's up. Go up there and listen to them. But the problem is that, like, for all of those glimpses we get of this different movie, the main characters, who the movie's about, aren't fundamentally interested in that. And so the movie is never really about that, except around the edges.
Well, because that's the problem with trying to make a movie about two different things, right? Like, they tried... I have a lot of respect to a degree for what the movie tried to do is because they're like, no one is going to watch a class drama. Like, that is not what is going to get butts in seats. But we want to try to make a Cinderella story and make it a little bit more believable. And so she has that moment. There's a lot of other moments that you would never get in romantic comedies where you have members of the working class who are just talking to each other about their problems as they relate to socioeconomic things. Like, that is stuff that never happens in romantic comedies, right? Like, romantic comedies are always about rich white people, right? Right? They are always about rich white people. And when they're not about rich white people, they are about white guys saving, you know, other white women.
Right.
And for, like,
pretty
as...
Women, if you will.
Pretty women. For as much of a Cinderella story as this is, there's still that little glimmer of hope because at the end, she doesn't just give up her job to run after this guy and, like, be the politician's wife. She makes it to the manager position. Like, you have to stay until the very end. But not only does she make it to the manager position, she brings two people up with her. Like, that is real class solidarity, right? Like, it's... That to me is like the most revolutionary thing about this entire movie.
Yeah, so like, I think since we're talking about like class, right? Every romantic comedy, you have to have a reason the people don't like, you know, they're going to get together in the end. The movie has to set up a barrier, and then the enjoyment of the movie is how well that barrier keeps them apart. And it can be racial, it can be cultural. Like, he's a tightwad lawyer, she's a crazy hippie, or, you know, he's a jewel thief and she's a federal marshal. Like, it's whatever the barrier is. And class is a kind of time-tested one, right? Like, it goes all the way back to real fairy tales. But you don't actually need to double down on that really hard. But this movie, at every turn, it is showing you, like, members of the ruling class who suck and members of the working class who have this cartoonish, you know, solidarity with one another.
Yeah.
I think the movie does several scenes where it tries deliberately to say that class solidarity outweighs racial division, right? Like...
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, romantic, like, we'll talk about this in just a second, but, like, there's a lot of romantic comedies are the comedy portion comes in from gender differences, right? Like, your difference in gender is what is leading to these comedic things happening, which was, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Right. That's exactly what I thought about when you said the gender differences.
Right, like,
she's doing the crazy girl stuff.
Right, and he's, like, doing the guy stuff. This is just class differences, right? Like, this is just about how the ruling class works with everybody who is not the ruling class. And like you said, when we talked about Out of Sight, there was a kind of racial blindness to the film where they didn't want you to see race. And in this, you've got, you know, black people, Hispanic people. There are even white people who are members of the working class. And it's all about class solidarity versus, like you said, racial solidarity.
Yeah, like Bob Hoskins plays like the head butler. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of like her friend, her mentor. He's the only character in the movie that like not only wants her to do well, but he like helps her get tools to do well. And then in the end, when she gets fired from impersonating the rich white lady, he quits.
He quits
in this act of class solidarity. Yeah. And then he gives this kind of like this big speech. He's like, you know, it takes dignity and intelligence to serve. And, you know, we do what they say because it's our job, but it doesn't mean they're better than us. And like, I think that moment, like, he's a white guy and she's a Latina. And then you mentioned her maid friends. Mm-hmm. It's like this Greek chorus of maids. And they don't actually have, like, personality. I don't remember their names, but, like, there's very clearly the white one, and she's, like, this outer borough white ethnic. She's like, oh, forget about it. You gotta go get the job, Jennifer Lopez. And then the black one is just, like, she's a girl.
She's, like,
and then
sassy.
The Latina one. She's like,
they're pretty stereotyped.
Yeah, they're very stereotypical. So much so that, like, the movie wants us to be, and you see them all the time, right? They're in, like, every scene, and, like, they keep popping up.
You don't see them all the time.
Well, but like they're in the montages, and every time she goes to the supply room, they're in there like snapping their finger in a Z formation, and you know, chit chatting. And then at the end, when you get all these like magazine covers of what happened to all the characters, those three maids are on one. And I think what the movie wants us to keep, what it wants to keep putting in front of us, is that like it doesn't matter that there's a white one, a black one, a Hispanic one. None of that matters. It's all, the only divide that matters is money, the haves and the have-nots.
Yeah, I mean, my mom worked at a hotel, and she worked at the Holiday Inn, and she ran, like, the breakfast service there.
Did she have some finger-snapping multi-ethnic best friends
well,
who
that's
helped each other
my,
out?
Yeah, I mean, that's my whole point, which is that everybody that we grew up knowing, they were all people who worked with her, and it was this, like, very multi-ethnic crew of black people. She was the only Indian person there, but there were a lot of Hispanic people there, and it was all about that solidarity of that job. And the racial lines is not that they were invisible, but they definitely came second to what it is that they did for a living.
And like you said, like this movie, I wish it had the courage to be more, not that it has to be, you know, gritty and harsh, but like, yeah, like the movie where this class division is in every scene. It's pregnant all the time, but yet Jennifer Lopez and Ralph Fiennes don't ever really talk about it. It's not really about that at the heart of the movie. And if it had been, it would have been a way better movie.
And it's one of those things where the fairy tale aspect for me is that those class differences are things that you can overcome if you just get to know the person, right? Like that's the undercurrent of the film as well, which is he thinks that he is meeting a rich lady, right? So that they're immediately starting off on an equal scale, and he kind of takes her seriously because she's beautiful and she's well dressed and well spoken, and she's got this really adorable kid. And to him, she probably reads as white, right?
He describes her as Mediterranean. He doesn't even, which I think again is deliberate. Like he doesn't get
right. He
that
just
she's
doesn't
Latina
get it.
Because
doesn't get. He's just like she's kind of dark.
So are you saying that in reality, even if she was wearing a, you know, Da Vinci outfit or Da Vinci?
No. She's wearing
Gucci?
Gucci.
Yeah.
She's wearing Gucci. No. What I'm saying is that the end of the movie wants you to believe that class barriers can be overcome if people just get to know each other. Because
but really, they wouldn't actually have that much in common.
It's, you know, that's the whole messy portion of the relationship that we don't have to dive into, which is how do these two people relate to each other once it becomes very clear that she has this background and he has this background, and now they're going to try to be in a relationship together.
There's one scene where he's chasing after her and the media are chasing him, and there's reporters like, he's throwing his career away. And I was like, man, if an actual Kennedy was dating a hot Latina maid, that would be career gold.
Right? Yeah. I would love that. Wait to vote for that guy.
But again, because the movie keeps ringing this gong, like even like bystanders are like, they'll never make it work. They're from different worlds.
One of the montage sequences, like in every romantic comedy, there's always a montage.
The montage is here.
It's the Cinderella montage, and it's, I mean, very similar to in the cartoon where she kind of gets just magically made over.
Question about the montage, and maybe I wasn't paying super close attention. Yeah, so she's going to go to the big ball, and they're like, we got to get you fancied up, Jennifer Lopez. they got all these gowns and jewels and all of her, like, you know, working class pals are helping out. Where did they get all those gowns and jewels? Are they just laying around the hotel?
Again, no, you're not paying attention.
I guess I wasn't.
Class solidarity again at play because she calls in favors from all her other working class friends.
She's been covering all their shifts and their...
She kind of is also, you know, she works as kind of the concierge at this hotel and she knows how to get stuff done. It's kind of the implication that... all these people are on a different level, right? Like, but
they're all looking out for each other.
All looking out for each other.
Common foe,
and they all need to look out for each other because if they don't, there's nobody else who's looking out for them.
There's even there's an Asian lady, the seamstress, is this sort of like East Asian character. So they're definitely like spanning this like this racial panoply. Downstairs and upstairs is just all the jerk white boss. Well, no, we've just been yelling. I've completely forgot the track of what we're talking about.
No, I mean, I think we did really well. I think that we've covered kind of we've addressed the wokeness factor. I mean, that's one of the main reasons I really like this film is that it does try to intersect with these issues of class as they deal with romance.
Give me the fizzy fluff. If you're not going
to you don't like things that try to do both things.
Well, I don't think it doesn't commit to one thing, right? It's like, hey, what if we had all this, you know, this sort of subtext and like historical but it doesn't actually go there. Like it's afraid to actually follow through.
You know, it's kind of frustrating. We are on episode 4 and I'm not sure we found like a great Jennifer Lopez movie yet.
I would not unreservedly recommend any of the 4 films we have watched to anybody.
I don't think I don't think she's the problem, though. I don't think it's because she's a poor actress. I think that the projects that she ended up in and the ones that she has kind of had to do, some of them haven't aged well and some of them just aren't that great.
Yeah, I don't like going into this. I was like, I can't think of like, oh my God, I love all these great Jennifer Lopez roles. But yeah, like in every movie, she's never the problem. Like she's at minimum, she's doing her job successfully. And at maximum, she's turning in a great performance.
Out of the 4 that we have watched, I'm going to actually say Anaconda is probably worth watching. And then Made in Manhattan is number 2.
Anaconda, I think we said if you like that kind of thing, you will like Anaconda. Selena, I think you were worried that we would get canceled because we were
because
very hard
Brian.
On Selena. Luckily, no one listens to our podcast, so we can't be canceled.
Before we wrap it up, do you have a movie MVP?
Oh, I forgot the movie MVP. Who was your most valuable player in the film who was not Jennifer Lopez?
Oh, I have so many movie MVPs because I've seen this so many times. Probably Stanley Tucci. Stanley Tucci is the MVP, but then close second is Ty, the little boy.
Kid.
There is a scene in the
you
elevator.
Can't have 2. You got to pick 1.
All right, I'm going to pick Ty. I'm going to pick Tyler Posey.
Commit.
They're in the elevator and, you know, they've given the kid some quirks. He's a little socially awkward. He can't really, you know, handle public speaking.
Oh, he loves Nixon.
But
he loves
talking the 70s. Like he's super into the 70s. So he's listening to his little Walkman and they're in the elevator and there's a little back and forth. And Ty is like, oh, I know who you are. He's talking to Ralph Fiennes. And he's like, oh, you're the candidate for Senate. And the guy's like, yes. And Stanley Tucci.
No 11-year-old knows, like, a guy running for Senate.
He's a cute kid, okay? And he's precocious and he knows. And Stanley Tucci kind of turns to him and is like, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And, you know, Ty is like, what's the difference these days?
And they laugh.
And they laugh. And that's kind of also the point of the film, is that they don't want to get hung up on political parties, even though he's clearly a Republican.
Yeah, or more so. Like, I would say that, yeah, again, because the film is so invested in this idea that the class divide is the major divide, it doesn't matter that he's Republican. Like, he doesn't read as a Republican or a Democrat. He's just a rich guy, and rich guys take care of other rich guys. Along these lines, though, I'm going to give my MVP award to Bob Hoskins.
Oh, yeah.
As the head butler.
Great job.
He doesn't have a lot of screen time. He's a minor character. You do, like, in the little time he's on screen, you kind of get that him and Jennifer Lopez have, you know, kind of this bond and this mentor relationship. But then he does his speech, and it's not a movie, it's not a beautifully written movie, but, like, he invests that kind of short speech with a lot of gravitas, right? Like, this idea that, like, and it doesn't even know, like, she needs it, but this idea that, like, you know, they're not better than you, you know, and he doesn't come right out. It's not a movie about class antagonism. He's not preaching class warfare, but he's just trying, reminding her. And really, like, he's got an audience. He's reminding all these people, like, hey, they're not better than us. They were just born with money. You know, and I think, like, that speech is great, and I think he delivers it really well. And again, that's one of the scenes that belongs in the better movie we didn't get. But yeah, I do think the movie seems to be saying loudly and clearly that, you know, down in the trenches, the only thing that matters is that you're down in the trenches.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that's fair.
Hema, what are we watching next week for the 10 Movies podcast, our Jennifer Lopez season?
Join us next week where we will be talking about...
Geely!
Renowned stinker Geely.
Widely purported to be one of the worst films ever made. I don't see... How bad could it possibly be? I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
I have never seen it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well, just so I can know how bad it actually is.
Next week, join us here on the 10 Movies podcast, where we will be coming at you from Hemel's lavishly appointing podcasting patio in her backyard, surrounded by our dear friends, 8 million cicadas.
All right, see you next week.